The celebrations through the Christmas season seek to teach us in many different ways the truth of the humanity of Christ, the mystery of God's love, that He would come and embrace the fullness of what it is to be a human being. And that's really part of what this feast, the Feast of the Holy Family, is about. That the second person of the Trinity become a human being also is part of a family structure. Not only a nuclear family, but in his case, in the case of Middle Eastern people, a very extended and broad family. This is the only boyhood story about Jesus that is found in the Scriptures. There are many other early Christian writings that talk about the boyhood of Jesus, but this is the only story that has been included in the sacred Scriptures. It is a story about Jesus' coming of age. Age 12 was the age in which a Jewish male would present himself in the temple. Not be presented in the temple, but he himself would present himself in the temple. It was the sign that he now was a full and responsible member of the Israelite community. And while we might think that 12 is an awfully young age for that, there are other stories in the Scriptures that talk about this 12-year point of life and the coming of maturity. In the book of Daniel, when Susanna is accused of adultery by two men, and they need to make a judgment as to whether she's guilty or not, the crowd calls forth the young Daniel, who we are told is 12 years old. And Daniel sits in judgment, for Daniel is already, by having gone to the temple at age 12, a mature Israelite. Well, Jesus and Mary and Joseph leave Nazareth and they go to Jerusalem for the Passover feast. The rule is that if you live within a day's journey of Jerusalem, you had to go each year for the feast. Mary and Joseph lived much further than a day's journey. Nazareth is about 90 miles north of Jerusalem, and so it's a 3 or 4 day journey on foot. They would have left and they would have been joined on the road to Jerusalem by people coming from all other communities, all other towns. And that road coming south into Jerusalem would have been filled with travelers. And the closer they got to the city, the larger that crowd would have been. Jesus, being 12 years old, probably traveled with young people his own age, as would be the custom, that he would find people, they would make friends, they would run ahead, or they would lag behind, or they would go off the road to explore and have to be hauled back. That the kind of freedom that was experienced was fairly broad, because people looked out for each other. They would have entered Jerusalem by the Damascus Gate, the northern gate of the city, and then they would have come to the temple. And the first thing they had to do would be to go into the hall of the Gentiles, and they needed to purchase a lamb. Now we're told by the governor of Syria, who wrote about 50 years after this point in history, he wrote to Nero to describe how dangerous the Jews were, how they had multiplied, how they were a danger to the empire. And he said that in Jerusalem, on the day before Passover, the 14th of Nisan, in the afternoon, as many as 256,000 lambs were slaughtered. And the rule was that you had to have at least 10 people to share the lamb, and you couldn't have more than 20. And so the people participating in the Passover in Jerusalem, at least at that time, was somewhere between 2.5 million and 5 million people, pilgrims coming to the city. So it was a huge gathering. They would have purchased their lamb, and then in the court of the priests, the afternoon of the 14th of Nisan, the lambs would be slaughtered. And one can only imagine the bizarre situation of slaughtering 250,000 animals in one afternoon. And then those lambs would each be taken by their owner, and they'd be taken back to their homes and or to their places where they were staying. But for most people, they lived in tents surrounding the city because they couldn't afford lodging, and lodging was at a premium. And that evening, 250,000 fires were lit. Those lambs were roasted. And we're told by authors who describe, historians who describe, not necessarily this year that the scripture is talking about, but that time in the history of the people of Israel, that the smoke from those fires would blot out any ability to see the heavens, and that the roasting flesh of those animals would linger in the air for days. Well, they would eat the meal, they would eat the lamb and the unleavened bread and the herbs that were part of the ritual. The festival lasted 7 days. And on each day there was another religious activity. For instance, the day after Passover was the day in which people prayed for a good planting. This is the spring of the year. So they asked God's blessing upon the planting of crops. It was also during this time of Passover that the rabbis had to be available in the temple. Because people would come and they'd have questions to ask. They'd have disputes to settle. They'd have questions about ritual and practice that they needed opinions about. And young people would come. And young people were taught the history of Israel and were taught the prophecies about the Messiah. And so the elders and the rabbis, the teachers, would all be present. Mary and Joseph leave at the end of the 7 days and they start their journey back. A day's journey was regarded as a 7-hour journey. So they were on the road for 7 hours, and then they began to look for Jesus. They assumed he had been in the company of relatives and friends, and they didn't find him. And they go back and they find him in the temple. They find him with the rabbis. He's listening to their instruction. He's asking questions. He's engaging them. He wants to know. He is seeking understanding. And we're told that the people who observe him are filled with admiration for him, that he demonstrates understanding and the ability to answer questions far beyond his years. For St. Luke, the temple is very important in the story of Jesus. The whole gospel is about Jesus going to the temple, the first time being taken to the temple after 40 days after his birth, the second time, this time, when he's 12 years old, and the third time. There are 9 or 10 chapters in St. Luke's gospel in which Jesus moves from town to town, going to Jerusalem, to the temple, and that's the last time, the time when he will undergo his suffering and his death. So for St. Luke and for the story of Jesus, the temple and being in the temple is terribly important, because it is for him the Lord come taking possession of his house. It is God taking possession of his place. So
So Jesus says to Mary and Joseph, "Do you not know that I must be in my Father's house?"
Mary didn't understand this, as she didn't understand so much of what went on. She didn't understand the words that the shepherd spoke to her. She didn't understand the words that Gabriel spoke to her. She didn't understand the words that Simeon, the prophet, spoke to her. She held all of these things in her heart. She pondered on them. She is the woman of faith, not because she understands, but because she trusts. For contemporary people, faith is a virtue about what I believe. We make acts of faith in terms of articles of the creed. But for biblical people, faith had nothing to do with articles of the creed. Faith had to do with trust in God. As we say, I put faith in what this person says or does. I trust. It's in that sense that Mary is the model of faith. She is the person who, even in the midst of confusion, even in the midst of doubt, she rises above that doubt and she places her faith, her trust in God. And that's part of what we celebrate this day, is that Jesus is reared in a family, in a community, in an extended family, and that he's reared by people of faith, people who put their trust in God. And so, at the very end of the story, Luke says to us, after he went back to Nazareth, he progressed, he grew, he advanced in wisdom and age and grace. We might say he advanced intellectually, physically, and spiritually, that he grew into adulthood. And what we know is that no one does that on their own. No one advances in that fashion on their own. It's only with the assistance of other people, with parents and with teachers and with neighbors and friends and family members, that a person does grow in wisdom. Not just knowledge, not just information, but wisdom, the ability to see what is below the surface, and grows physically, grows strong, grows healthy. Again, not on one's own, but with the help of others. And grows spiritually, grows in one's relationship to God. Again, not on one's own, but as being part of a believing community, as being part of a family of faith, as being part of a community of faith, a trusting community, a trusting family. And so Luke ends the story by saying that Jesus, after this experience in Jerusalem, comes back and he matures. It's another way for him to say that he truly lives a fully human life. He grows up like all young people grow up. And he comes to maturity and adulthood as all young people are meant to. What we might think about this morning is the responsibility that we as adults have to partner with young people in that growing up. As young people grow in wisdom, as they grow in physical strength, as they grow in a spiritual life, that they don't do that on their own hook. And they do that only when parents and teachers, neighbors, family members, and friends become partners with them
as they walk the road, as they move, as they progress, as they grow to mature living.